Thank you, Ray. I apologize for not participating in the singing. I sometimes get some of my best ideas on the way up here, and I'm driving, so I had to add a point to my sermon once I got here. Wow, it's beautiful outside. Really enjoying the weather. I wish we'd got rain last night. I don't know what you all got, but we finally got some rain. We need a lot more. Well, a few months ago, I guess it's been now, we had a visiting speaker who mentioned when he was here, he was a pastor of a congregation in another part of the country, that their congregation distributed food, I think it was in the form of a food basket, to some needy people in their area. And other congregations in his area do the same thing, and they place their name on the food basket, the name of the congregation, so that people know where the food came from. And he mentioned that he hasn't been able to bring himself to do that. I suppose he's might be the one due to the fact that he's employed and he can do it during the week or whatever. He's the one that actually makes the delivery. And he said he couldn't bring himself to put the name on the basket, the name of the congregation. Now, why is that? Well, it's Matthew chapter 6, and you're familiar with it, but we're going to spend some time in the book of Matthew and some other verses, but I'll go ahead and read what he was referring to. Because in Matthew chapter 6, in the midst of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said the following. He said, "Take heed that you don't do your alms or your righteousness, some translations have, before men, to be seen of them. Otherwise, you have no reward of your Father which is in heaven." Therefore, I'm reading from the King James now. "Therefore, when you do your alms, don't sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets." This is Matthew 6, verse 2. "That they may have glory of men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward." Or as if you have the New American Standard, it says they have their full reward. They've got it all. All they're going to get. Verse 3. "But when you do alms, don't let your right hand or left hand know what your right hand's doing. That your alms may be in secret. And your Father which sees in secret himself shall reward you openly. And when you pray," verse 5, "don't be as the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Truly, I say unto you, they have their reward," or they have their full reward. "But you, when you pray, enter into your closet. And when you have shut your door, pray to your Father, which is in secret. And your Father, which is in secret, shall reward you openly." Then he gives some examples here of prayer. And if we skip down to verse 16, he makes another point. He says, "When you fast, don't be as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast." And, you know, they've got their full reward, Jesus said. "But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that you don't appear unto men to fast, but unto your Father which is in secret. And your Father which sees in secret shall reward you openly." So this is one section of Scripture that has led people, like the individual we heard from, to say, "Well, I don't want to draw attention to the service that I'm doing or that we're doing as a group when we serve or when we worship." Then, it wasn't too long after that, in the series on Secrets of the Vine, the second part, that one of the blanks we filled in, we put the word "displayed," and the point was made that public works are to be purposefully displayed. Public works are to be purposely displayed. Now that seems, at least at first glance, and a lot of commentaries admit this, that seems to fly in the face of what we just read. And the verse that was quoted in that series is in the chapter before, in the same discourse, the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verse 14. Matthew 5, verse 14 says, "You are the light of the world. A city that's set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick or a lampstand. And it gives light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." This says to let your light shine in such a way that it might be seen. That's the way the New American Standard says. Let it shine in such a way that it might be seen. So which is it? Is this a contradiction? I mean, it's the same person that said both these sections here. So I would think it's not a contradiction, but to me it seems to be. I'm in my Western way of thinking, my logical brain, it seems like, well, he says one thing in one verse, says another thing in another verse. Well, do we understand these verses properly? Do I understand them properly? Do they complement each other or do they contradict each other? If they complement each other, how do they complement each other? Well, let's explore these questions today. And if you'd like titles for sermons, this sermon I titled, Do Alms in Secret or Let Light Shine? Do alms in secret or let your light shine, I guess I could say. Now, first of all, I suppose it would be fair to share with you, and if you were here the week that we had that section on Secrets of the Vine, you already know this, but I think the first I'd like to share my personal bias, you know, how I have felt and why this was a question for me, why I struggled with this and why I continue to struggle a little bit with it. I think my perspective is similar to the individual that we heard from saying that he didn't put the name of the congregation on the food baskets. We come from similar type background. That we don't want to draw attention to service that we would do to God. That would be inappropriate. And then how would somebody that thinks like that, as I did, how would somebody like that interpret Matthew chapter 5 and verses 14 to 16? Well, I would say, that's talking about obeying God. In fact, the rest of the Sermon on the Mount is talking about obeying God in different ways, and that we just obey God and people will see that. But if you look at Matthew 5:16 a little more closely, it doesn't actually say it that way. It doesn't say just obey God and people will see it. And that's the way I've interpreted this in the past. Now I'm going to read it directly from the New American Standard this time. That verse is not as passive, if you want to put it that way, as I used to think it was. Matthew 5, verse 16. From the New American Standard. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. We're not just to obey. Of course we're to obey. We're not just to have good works, for that matter. But we're to let this light shine in such a way that people can see it. Now, in this little booklet, we filled in a blank that said, well, I'll read what it says. It uses the word displayed. Public good works are to be purposefully displayed. Now, at least the translations I looked at didn't use that word display, but it does have that connotation, at least somewhat. You know, these things are supposed to be able to be seen. Well, let's look at some more scriptures rather than just trying to come to a conclusion based on these two selections from the Sermon on the Mount. Let's gather some more scriptures that inform us in these two areas. Now, first of all, I'd like to reread what we already read and maybe draw some points from it and pay more attention to what it says specifically. In Matthew chapter 6, we read verses 1 to 6, where it says, don't do your alms or your righteousness before men. Now, let me look here in the New American Standard. I forget what word they used. I know some of you use this. So. It's just the word righteousness. Could be translated either way. And I looked at a lot of the commentaries and they go back and forth about it. It means don't do the good things that you do. Whether it's going to the trouble of doing some kind of a work, as alms would be, something in particular for someone, or a personal devotion, as it's obviously talking about here when it talks about prayer or fasting, or just in righteousness, just in obeying God, as is spelled out in more detail in the Sermon on the Mount. None of those things should be done in such a way that to be seen of men is what it says here in verse 1. So one thing we can conclude from Matthew chapter 6 verse and beginning in verse 1 is that we are not to do any of these things to draw attention to ourselves. Okay? It does say that. It says in verse 2, when you do your alms, don't sound a trumpet, because that's, you know, your reward. In fact, it says, verse 3, when you do alms, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. So we are to serve or do alms in secret, at least in one context we are. And those that don't have that approach, that want to draw attention to themselves for the purpose of getting a reward, get their full reward, it says in the New American Standard. Get all they're going to get in this life right now. So when we serve, when we do righteousness, when we do alms, Jesus' advice here is don't do it for the purpose of seeking a reward now. And don't do it to be seen of men. He uses the analogy, not the analogy, he uses the example of many in the society around him who would do things, it would actually draw attention to themselves by having some kind of a public display for the purpose of getting people to look and getting people to notice. Another point we can gather from Matthew chapter 6, of course, is that God rewards openly. So Jesus is saying, don't draw attention to yourself. Do things privately, even secretly. Don't seek a reward now because God will reward you openly. And don't do anything in this context, this type of service, for the purpose of being seen by men. There were some who did in his society. In fact, if we, and you know Matthew chapter 23, if we went to Matthew 23, where he has some strong words to say a little bit later in his ministry about some of the religious leaders of his time. And these are religious leaders that were despised by and large, at least by some point, people in the public. Some people held them up on high, you know, on a pedestal and in high esteem. But they were resented in many cases, at least some of them were. Matthew 23, I'll read a few verses here from maybe verse 1 to verse 12. Jesus spoke to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to do, do it. But don't do it after their works, for they say one thing and they don't do it. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves won't move them with one of their fingers. But all their works they do for to be seen of men," says in verse 5. They do these things to be seen of other men. They make broad their phylacteries, enlarge the borders of their garments. The phylacteries had the little copies of the law that they wore on their person. And then they had the borders, the tassels. They make them big, very noticeable, so people can see that you're doing it. And they love the uppermost rooms at the feasts, you know, the front rows, the reserved seats, the reserved parking, whatever. And the chief seats in the synagogues, and greetings in the market to be called of men, Rabbi, Rabbi. But don't be called Rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ, and you are brothers. And call no man your father on earth, for one is your father, which is in heaven. Neither be called masters, for one is your master, even Christ. But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant. And whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased. And he that shall humble himself shall be exalted. So Jesus is saying the approach that these leaders had was entirely wrong. It was upside down. They sought to exalt themselves. Therefore, they're going to be abased. We are to be the opposite of that. So what is he preaching against here? He's preaching against hypocrisy, saying one thing and doing another. He's preaching against doing works to be seen. And, you know, we've read these over the years. That's why I have my particular bias, where I'm thinking, well, I should not be doing anything to be seen. These individuals were doing it for status. They wanted to be thought of as important. They wanted to be respected. They wanted to be looked up to. That was their approach. And Jesus was entirely against that. And he hinted at that back in Matthew chapter 6. Now he's being very blunt about who he's talking about and why he's saying it. On the other hand, to quote Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof, on the other hand, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14 that we already read says, "Let your light shine." And not only that, the King James says, "Let your light shine before men." Now, we just read that We're not supposed to do things to be seen of men. And yet Matthew 5:14 says specifically that we're to do one thing, that is, let our light shine before men. That seems to be the opposite. To be seen. And because the verses before said to put the light up so it can do some good. Now, another very important point is made, though, in verse 16. And glorify, you know, they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. So there's a different purpose. We read that the religious leaders of Jesus' time wanted to draw attention to themselves and get respect and standing and, you know, attention or whatever for themselves. But yet in Matthew 5, Jesus is saying, let your light shine. Do it in such a way that men can see it. Do it before men for the purpose not of glorifying yourself in any kind of way, but for the purpose of glorifying God and that others may actually glorify God. We can turn to a couple other scriptures that fit in with this. I'll turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. Excuse me. This one was in Secrets of the Vine. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, having your conversation or conduct, your behavior, honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. That's an interesting verse, saying these people aren't going to love you necessarily because you're doing the right thing. But when God reveals himself to them, then it will glorify God because they knew somebody who was doing what they're just coming to understand. Now, once again, if we look at these verses, it talks about that you have to be seen. They may by your good works, which they shall behold, in King James. It's saying they will see these things. How is it going to make an impression on them if they don't see it? So somehow it has to shine before them. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 15, Philippians 2 and verse 15. Now he's going through a list of things that we should be doing, which I'll break into the thought here. That you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. You as a believer, as a Christian, are to shine as a light in the world. So far, we see that we're to do alms and righteousness in secret so that God will reward us openly. But on the other hand, we are to let our light shine that people can see it. So we still have a bit of a conflict, I think. A bit of a contrast, at least. Before I attempt to solve that contrast, I'd like to look at a couple of things. One thing I'd like to consider, ask a question perhaps, how is it that you are a light? How is it that I am a light? You can write down these scriptures if you'd like. 1 John chapter 1 and verse 5. 1 John 1 and verse 5 says, this is the message, or this then is the message which we heard of him and declare unto you that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. 1 John 1 and verse 5 says that God is light. And verse 7 says, but if we walk in the light, As he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Jesus Christ, his Son, cleanses us from all sin. So, it says here that God is light. It doesn't say that we're light. But yet we've already read that we're to let our light shine. John chapter 8, in verse 32, which was also, I believe, in the Secrets of the Vine. Perhaps you don't feel as conflicted about this as I did, or do. So you might be way ahead of me, which is fine. I'll share with you what I'm learning. John chapter 8, verse 32. No, I didn't mean that. I wrote down 32 because that's a scripture I like, but I meant 12, I think. John chapter 8 and verse 12. Jesus spoke again to them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Now, back in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, well, actually, verse 14. He said, you are the light of the world. And yet, in John 8, verse 12, he says, I, talking about himself, am the light of the world. And 1 John, John wrote that the Father is light. Or God is light. In John 8, verse 12, at least I think we get a hint. It says, Jesus said that he's talking about himself, that Jesus is the light of the world. He that follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. So, how is it that I can be the light of the world, or that you can be the light of the world? Because Jesus is the light of the world, and those that walk with him, that follow him, have that light. And if you have that light, you can shine. I can shine. And we also understand, you're familiar with John 17. I'll read a few verses from John 17. Jesus' prayer to his Father before he was crucified that night there. John 17, verse 9. I pray for them. I pray not for the world, but for them which you have given me, for they are yours. And all mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I am glorified in them. Jesus says he's glorified in you and in me. He's the light of the world, but he's glorified in you and me. And on down in verses 22 and 23, just to break into the thought there, it says, the glory which you gave me, Jesus saying to the Father, I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one. I and them, and you and me, that they may be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that you have sent me, and have loved them as you have loved me. So we understand that through the Spirit, that Jesus lives in us. Therefore, we are the light of the world as he is the light of the world, because he's in us. So it's Jesus in us that allows us to shine. Before I leave this concept of how it is that we can shine, I want to ask one other question. This might be more a grammatical question. What's similar about the words salt and light? In Matthew 5, and now we didn't read it, this verse 13, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? And if not, it's good for nothing to be cast out and trodden underfoot of men. And then he says, you are the light of the world. So there, right after one another, he says, you are salt of the earth, and you are the light of the world. Is there anything similar about those words salt and light in English? Anybody got an idea? Go ahead.
I don't have a similar thing as far as words, but you need both of them for light.
Okay. That's not where I was going, but that obviously that's true. They're both necessary. Go ahead. Oh, both white? Okay. That's a character. I was looking for something similar about the words themselves, not about what the words mean. These are good ideas, though. I was going to get more ideas by getting you to try to figure out what's in my brain, then I get what's in your brain. What does salt do? Give me a one word. Easier than that. Salt. Salts. Doesn't it? Salt, salts. What does light do? It lights. That's what I was going for. See, you get making it more complicated than I had it. But it was good ideas. Everything you said was good. But what I was looking at is that as words, they're nouns and verbs. It's like the message I gave about the gospel and evangelism, that in Greek, now we're talking English here, but in Greek, that the noun gospel is of the same form as the verb to evangelize. It's the same. It's a noun and a verb for the same thing, just like a painter paints, an evangelist evangelizes. Well, light lights and salt salts. That's true in English, not necessarily in Greek in these particular verses. For those of you that care, this isn't important at all, but in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, the word for light is phos, P-H-O-S in English, or transliterated. Where we get phosphorus and photo and all those types of things from the Greek. That's the Greek word that's used for light. The Greek word that's used for shine is actually a different word. It's lampo, L-A-M-P-O, transliterated. Obviously, we get that in English. We get our word lamp. But the fact is that lights, light. And salt, salts. But there's a difference. And this is something I want to point out that I think is significant. Salt doesn't have to salt, does it? Now, you know, you can put salt, or you can have salt in your salt shaker sitting on your table, and it's not doing anything but sitting there. It's passive. It's not salting anything, not preserving anything, not flavoring anything, right? Light, to use a double negative here, light cannot not shine. Does that make sense? You cannot have light that doesn't shine. Or it's not light. It's an intrinsic property of light that it lights. You can't just bottle some up, sit here and say it's not going to light for a while. It's not light then. Light's zipping along in the universe at 186,000 miles per second, no matter what, in a vacuum. It's in something else that goes a little slower. It has to move. It has to be lighting. You put that bushel, you put that basket, that measuring basket that Jesus used in Matthew chapter 5 here, Matthew 5. The light doesn't stop lighting. It's bouncing around inside the basket. Some of it's getting out, bouncing off whatever. It's still lighting. It's just blocked. But it doesn't stop shining. What it does, we cover it up, it can't shine as far. It doesn't do any good in terms of lighting up an area so that somebody can see, maybe to walk or to read or whatever. Light by nature has to shine. Now, I don't know if that helps you, but it helps me. It helps me to understand because Jesus lives in me. Jesus lives in you. He is light. He's the light of the world. Therefore, you're the light of the world. Therefore, you shine. If you're not shining, you're not light. I didn't even have all this all together in my notes, but it's coming together in a way that is even better than I thought. You see, when Jesus is explaining in verses 14 to 16, that you're the light of the world and that you need to be set up where you can do some good. The reality is the light is lighting. You can't stop that unless you put the light out. And it's not a light anymore. His only point here is, since you are a light, and since you are lighting, put the light where it can be seen and do some good. In the New American Standard, you know, in such a way that it can be seen so that men can glorify God. So the point here is to arrange the light, if you want to put it that way, or the circumstances surrounding the light, or the circumstance of where it is and so forth. Arrange it in such a way that it's visible to more people and can do some good. Now this helps, but it doesn't solve the problem for me. But to me, it helps. It gets us along the way. So far, at least where I am in my mind up to this point, is that as Christians, we have light because the light of the world, Jesus the Messiah, is in us. And we have that light. That light, according to Jesus' instruction in Matthew 5, is to draw attention to God, to glorify God. In order to do that, it needs to be visible. If you hide it, it can't in any way glorify God. On the other hand, just a few verses later, in the recording we have, as much as is possible, when we do our alms, when we do righteousness, we are not to draw attention to ourselves. So again, I think there's a little bit of tension. On the one hand, we're to be seen. On the other hand, we're not to be seen. Maybe, again, that's not a problem for you, but it is a little bit of a problem for me, so I'm working through it. And I want to resolve that. So, let's look at a few more scriptures. Let's look at the example of Jesus, the one who gave us these instructions. Let's look and see what he did in his life, and perhaps we can learn a little bit from that to, if I may say so, shed some light on the tension between these two concepts, these two ideas. In Matthew chapter 14, and verse 23, again, just breaking into a thought to show something. He says, when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up unto a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. Jesus did not seek a crowd when he wanted to pray. Does that mean Jesus never prayed in public? No, you know, they prayed in the synagogue. He broke bread. They gave thanks. There was a time to pray. And then he taught the disciples how to pray. And he invited them to be with him, at least some of them, on the night before his crucifixion so that they could see and observe and later on record that particular prayer. And I imagine there were other times when he prayed in their presence. Because why? Because he was a teacher. He was their teacher. He was teaching them how to do it. But in general, I mean, this is just one example here, but there are others. When he wanted to pray, and he wasn't in a teaching mode, he went apart. He went off by himself. In Luke chapter 5, and verse 16, Luke 5:16. And he withdrew himself, says in the King James, into the wilderness and prayed. He got away from it all and from the people. In Luke chapter 4, just one chapter back, verse 1, Jesus, being full of the Holy Spirit, returned from Jordan, was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, being 40 days tempted of the devil. In those days he did eat nothing. And when, you know, he was very hungry when it was over. He fasted and prayed for 40 days. Off in the wilderness with nobody there. You know, it says when it was all said and done that the angels came and waited on him. There weren't people there to wait on him. He was off by himself. In Luke chapter 5, back in Luke chapter 5, verse 12, it came to pass when he was in a certain city, a man full of leprosy who, seeing Jesus, fell on his face and besought him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. And he put forth his hand, Jesus did, and touched him, and saying, I will, be you clean. And immediately the leprosy departed from him, and he charged him not to go and tell no man. He charged him to go and tell no man, but go and show himself to the priest and offer for the cleansing according to the law of Moses. So here was a healing that was kind of private. He's saying, you know, don't make a big deal about it. Now, you heal somebody of leprosy, that's not exactly private, because then people that knew this man could see. But here he tried to keep it down, keep it quiet. However, while we're in Luke, you know chapter 4, verse 16, says when he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. So he worshipped in a public way. He was a teacher. Back in the book of Matthew, chapter 26 and verse 55. You know, when they came to arrest him with a big crowd and the swords, and you know, the high priest was after him and so forth, he said to the crowd there, he says, "Are you come out as against a thief with swords and staves? For to take me, I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and you didn't lay hold on me." Jesus said, "Look, you know, I've been, in, you know, for 3 years or so, he'd been teaching in the temple publicly. He wasn't trying to hide from them. He wasn't trying to do that in private." Chapter 14 of Matthew, and verse 14. Matthew 14 and verse 14. Jesus went forth, saw a great multitude, and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick. A whole big multitude, and he healed sick people right in front of the crowd there. So here's an occasion when it was not private at all. In fact, skip down to verse 15. When it was over, it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a desert place, and you know it's past time. You can't buy some food anywhere. Send them, it's late. You got to send them home. They may go to the villages and buy themselves something to eat. There's nothing out here. We're out in the wilderness. There's no place to get food." And, of course, here's one of the miracles of the five loaves and fishes that fed the 5,000 men. That's a very public miracle. It drew a lot of attention. So if we look at Jesus' example, and you know, we could look at a lot more. You could say, well, that doesn't help. You know, it's both. He did alms. He did his thing in public and in private. That's the example. So how do we apply that? How am I getting this together in my brain anyway? We know Ecclesiastes 3:1, familiar principle. There's a time and a season for everything. You know, for example, there's a time to answer a fool according to his folly and a time not to answer a fool according to his folly, to give one example. We know from the scriptures that we've read that as Christians we have light because the light is in us, and that light is there for the purpose of drawing attention to God, to glorify God. Because of that, it needs to be visible. And because it is light, it has to shine. Just a matter of, you know, where does it shine and who sees it. We also know from Matthew chapter 6 and other scriptures that when we do alms, the purpose should not be to draw attention to ourselves, but to God. So how do we reconcile all that? Well, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16 that we read all before so many times said, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven." Good works are to be seen for the purpose of glorifying God. If those works are not seen, God cannot be glorified. Now, this doesn't answer the question, not that it's an important question necessarily, it doesn't answer the question as to whether or not you or I might prefer to put our name or a congregational name or something like that on a food basket that gets donated to some needy person or needy group. I don't think this is spelled out one way or the other. The point is, God can be glorified because that gift was given, and the people that are receiving that gift know it came from a Christian who cared for them and God's glorified, regardless of whether they know who gave it in particular. So good works are to be seen for the purpose of glorifying God. The two verses prior to Matthew 5, verse 16 say, look, you don't light a light and then stick a basket over it, or you're defeating the purpose of having a light in the first place. You wouldn't have had to light it. Lights shine. So if they're shining, let them shine somewhere to do some good. So the obvious principle there is, look, if you're doing a good work, don't try to hide it. Now, it doesn't say to publicize it. I didn't have this in my notes, I forgot. But I didn't turn to any scriptures because I couldn't find any, where Jesus held a news conference and invited the press and said, I'm about ready to do a miracle. I would like, everybody get in close where you can see. He didn't do that. And although maybe he had disciples that wanted to, when they gave their alms, they gave to the poor. Judas had the bag, and they did give to the poor. That's what ministries did then. And they didn't do it in a public way to draw attention to themselves. Although many Jews did that, but in Jesus' entourage, they didn't. Because Jesus didn't stand for that. He preached against that. So in order for the light to shine, it can't be covered up. But on the other hand, I can't read anywhere where it says publicize it, try to draw attention to it. In fact, the opposite is true. And Matthew 6, verse 1, of course, we read several times, good works are not to be done for the purpose of drawing attention to oneself. The whole reason for the light to be shining is to glorify God, to draw attention to God and what He's doing, not to draw attention to oneself. So I think I have a little bit better understanding anyway. A light has to shine, or it's not a light. If you've got a light, put it somewhere where it does some good. Don't try to cover it up. Don't try to hide it. I think my personal bias over the years has been incorrect. I felt that I had to hide it. There's nothing in here about hiding it. In fact, the opposite is true. Don't hide it. But I think my resistance to publicizing a good work is probably well-founded in Scripture. Because that's drawing attention to oneself, not to God. I just have one more point. And that point is really the end. In order for this to be an issue at all, in order to even have this question, what has to be true? I ask questions and I don't give you enough information, so we're going to have all kinds of answers. But I'd like, what has to be the case in order for this to even be a question? Anybody willing to?
Have to have good works.
Oh, got it right away. That's what I was looking for. If there's no good works, we don't need to ask this. We don't have any conflict at all. So I can wrestle in my brain till the cows come home about which is the right approach to this. But if I'm spending all my time wrestling in my brain as to which is the correct approach to how good works should be performed or in what circumstances and how and so forth, I'm missing the entire point because I'm too busy trying to figure out some kind of a technical thing, perhaps, or exactly how to apply something to actually be doing what I ought to be doing. So that's more important. There has to be good works in the first place. And that's more important. So, I'm still a little uneasy with the word display. And maybe that's because you can take display more than one way. Who am I to question this in one sense? But if display to you means, as it does to me, to stick it up on a pedestal, to try to draw attention to it. I don't think that's what Matthew 5, verse 16, or 14, 15, and 16 are saying. I don't think it's saying display public good works. But if you can use that word to mean don't hide, I'm all for it. To be sure you're doing it in such a way that it can be seen is fine. To draw attention to it, I'm still a little uneasy with that. But far more important is the fact that there's some good works there to be concerned about how they appear and what kind of a reflection those good works make on God. That's what we need to be concerned with. So let's yield to God so that he can bear fruit in us individually and collectively, so that the light of God will shine through us to his glory.